Welcome to the AOT Pod, an all-new FRCS-themed podcast tackling key themes, challenging topics, and insightful intellect within otolaryngology. Hosted by myself, Georgie Wellstead, and Joshua Michaels, with the support from the ENT UK Foundation and the Association of Otolaryngologists in Training. Your guide to passing the ENT FRCS starts here as we take you around the country speaking to some of the best and brightest minds our specialty has to offer. So without further ado, let's begin.
Hello, I'm Lauren Bolton, an ENT registrar based in Yorkshire. Today's theme is tinnitus, and I'm pleased and privileged to be joined by Mr. Gaurav Chowdhury, who is a consultant otologist based in Sheffield. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Chowdhury. How are you?
Hi, Lauren. Thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure. And I'm very well, thank you.
Great. So to start with, we've got some quick-fire questions. So the first, when did you take your exam and what was going on in your life at the time when you were preparing?
So I took my exam back in 2018. And at the time, I had recently got married. And actually, much of what I remember is just spending a lot of time getting to know the M1, driving up and down between my deanery and where my wife worked. So actually a podcast like this would have come in quite handy for me at the time.
Sounds challenging. How did you find balancing that when you were studying, and did you have any other challenges that came up preparing for the exam?
You know, it was challenging finding the time to fit in after a busy day's work. But the main thing I found challenging was the written. I found that the breadth and the depth of knowledge that you need is quite large. And try as you might, I found it's impossible to cover every single angle of every condition. But having done the exam, I would say to candidates that as long as you read around the subject for all the major syllabus topics and read in some breadth, you should be fine.
Okay, so on to something more positive. How did you feel or celebrate when you passed the exam?
I felt, you can imagine, very good. I mean, the overriding feeling was one of relief, because you tend to get your life back after that. That's what it signifies. And I think when I found out I was scrubbed up with a complex peds case with my consultant and a few others, and my consultant actually made me de-scrub to find my result out. It could have gone either way, but thankfully I passed. Congratulations from my theatre, which was very nice.
Great. So moving on to our clinical scenario, you are running an outpatient clinic and you have a new patient referred from general practice. They're a 50-year-old female presenting with a right-sided tinnitus associated with a feeling of pressure in her ear. Could you please explain your differential diagnoses for this patient and describe how you would clinically evaluate them?
So tinnitus has a very wide differential, so I would perform a comprehensive history and examination. For her presenting complaint, I'd want to know the duration of tinnitus, whether it's constant or episodic, and any associated symptoms, which would then steer my history taking in a particular direction. So you mentioned fullness. For example, tinnitus with dizziness episodically with fullness might indicate Meniere's disease. Tinnitus that is pulsatile in nature with dizziness and fullness and dizziness on loud noises could indicate third window phenomenon. If the tinnitus was clicking in nature, it might imply myoclonus, for example. And if the tinnitus was in line with breathing, for example, with feelings of autophony, this could suggest patulous eustachian tube. I'd also want to know if the tinnitus is pulsatile or non-pulsatile. And if it does sound like their heartbeat, I would ask whether it's in line with their pulse. I'd want to know any exacerbating or relieving factors. Is it better on the weekends away from work? Is it worse after a busy shift at work, for example? In the past medical history, I'd want to elicit any tinnitus-associated conditions. For example, past ear surgery, TMJ dysfunction, any history of depression or anxiety, thyroid disease, anemia, any previous chemotherapy or any radiotherapy near the head and neck region. I always try not to forget asking about cotton bud use as well, as that in itself can, in many patients, cause tinnitus. In the drug history, I'd want to inquire about any tinnitus causing or tinnitus associated drugs, common ones being aspirin or other NSAIDs, certain diuretics, and any previous or current ototoxics. I'd also want to think about street drug use, such as marijuana. In the social history, I'd want to know about any occupational excessive noise exposure, in the, any recreational noise exposure, such as hobbies, for example, DJing or shooting, and also appropriate use of ear protection. Finally, I'd want to know about alcohol history or drinking alcohol to excess. For the systems review, I'd, in particular for pulsatile tinnitus, I would want to elicit any symptoms suggestive of conditions like anemia, thyrotoxicosis, and ask if they may be pregnant, and also elicit any symptoms of benign intracranial hypertension, as all these things can manifest as pulsatile tinnitus. Crucially, I would move on to ask about the impact on the patient, because that's the reason they're here. Is the tinnitus intrusive or non-intrusive? And if it's intrusive, how is it affecting them? Is it affecting their mood, their sleep pattern, their ability to go about their activities of daily living and their general lifestyle? Moving on to examination, I'd do a comprehensive ENT exam, focusing particularly on the ears. And on otoscopy, going from lateral to medial, I would look for signs that may point to the cause. For example, earwax, otitis externa, or cotton bud use in the ear canal. Going medial, abnormality of the drum, such as perforation, meningitis, or retraction. At the middle ear, any sign of chronic otitis media, whether with or without cholesteatoma, or glue ear. I'd also be mindful of rarer causes which may come up in the exam, such as sign of a glomus tumour, Brown sign, which is a blue tinge of a glomus tumour or middle ear lesion behind the drum that may blanch on pneumatic otoscopy. Schwartz's sign is classed as a flamingo red blush, suggestive of active otosclerosis, and that can be quite a subtle sign. If the drum was moving in and out on breathing, this may suggest patulous eustachian tube. And I would also be mindful to hear for any objective audible clicking near the patient, which would suggest middle ear myoclonus. And if present, I would look at the palate as well for palatal myoclonus and do an otoneurological exam. I'd also assess for TMJ, tenderness, or clicking. And if the tinnitus were pulsatile, I would auscultate the head and neck for Bruit's. In terms of investigations, in the clinic, I would get audiogram and tympanogram for everyone. In terms of blood tests, for pulsatile tinnitus, I would consider full blood count for anemia and thyroid function tests. And in terms of further investigation or scans, that would depend on the type of tinnitus. So, for the vast majority of patients who have symmetrical non-pulsatile tinnitus, I would not obtain any particular scan as the yield is likely to be very low. For unilateral tinnitus, particularly with asymmetric sensory neural loss, I would obtain MRI-IAM. For pulsatile tinnitus, I would obtain vascular imaging, which in most hospitals is either MR angiogram venogram of head and neck or CT angiogram of head and neck. Following this, if there were ongoing clinical concern, I would consider referral for formal angiogram, although in my practice this is relatively rare because it carries increased risk of cerebrovascular accident. For pulsatile tinnitus, I would also consider Doppler ultrasound of the carotids. And if suspecting BIH, benign intracranial hypertension, I would ask the patient to see an optician to look for a papilledema, indicated to neurology or physicians for potential ligature.
Can you describe the background pathophysiology of tinnitus?
So tinnitus is very common but poorly understood. Broadly, it can be classified as subjective or objective, and pulsatile or non-pulsatile. In general, subjective tinnitus is that which originates from the auditory system, and usually, despite investigations, there's no identifiable cause. In contrast, objective tinnitus usually results from some identifiable cause in the tissues of the head and neck, which we can identify on investigation. So the pathophysiology of subjective tinnitus, there are various theories. I don't think we've completely understood the whole pathophysiology, but in general, it's thought that there is some triggering event, usually in the cochlea. And this triggering event is followed by a maladaptive response off the auditory system, which perpetuates or promotes this abnormal sensation into a vicious cycle, which keeps going. So the triggering event with cochlear damage may result in loss of outer hair cells or cochlear dead regions or deafferentiation. There are other theories as well. At the molecular level, there is dysfunction, for example, with calcium channel dysfunction or glutamate receptor dysfunction. And this initial event then leads to the auditory cortex setting up a maladaptive response, which keeps it going. And examples of the maladaptation are evidence of increased spontaneous firing in the cortex in the regions that are next to the damaged frequencies. And that's been observed. A kind of like a phantom limb pain, but for sound. There's also evidence that there's increased afferent excitation in the nerves, even though there's no external stimulus. And consequently, there's a reduced efferent inhibition coming back from the higher centers. On top of this, it gets more complicated because there are other brain centers involved as well and have been shown to be more active, such as the centers to do with emotion and memory and attention. And this we see reflected in our clinics because there's a heavy psychological and emotional component to tinnitus and the experience of tinnitus. So for that subjective tinnitus, for objective tinnitus, the pathophysiology is a bit more straightforward to understand because there's usually a identifiable factor. Most commonly, this is some vascular abnormality, for example, AV malformations in the head and neck, or glomus tumors, carotid artery stenosis causing turbulent blood flow that's heard, or vascular tortuosities near the cochlea, which again are heard by the cochlea. In BIH, the theory is that the raised intracranial pressure affects the blood flow and the dural sinuses, or directly via the CSF, it affects the perilymph and is perceived as tinnitus. Myoclonus is easy to understand with spasming, repetitive spasms of the middle ear muscles or the palatal muscles. And finally, in systemic conditions like anemia or thyrotoxicosis or pregnancy, there is a hyperdynamic circulation and increased cardiac output, which is thought to be perceived as pulsatile tinnitus.
Could you let me know what are the critical findings of the investigations that you discussed earlier relating to this clinical scenario?
Yes, so going through the investigations, pure tone audiogram might show a sensory neural loss of a certain pattern, for example, presbycusis, or noise-induced hearing loss, or a congenital hearing loss, or simply asymmetric sensory neural loss. The audiogram might otherwise point to conductive causes, conductive hearing loss may be from, for example, glue ear, chronic middle ear disease, or middle ear tumours, or otosclerosis as the cause of the tinnitus. Tympanogram would be useful because it may suggest glue ear or perforation if it was type B, or Eustachian tube dysfunction if type C. In some centres, if you suspect middle ear myoclonus, speaking to your audiologist, you may be able to obtain a running tympanogram over time, which would possibly show a sawtooth pattern to show evidence of this spasm, although the muscle would need to be spasming at the time of the test. The blood tests, I would expect to look for anemia on full blood count or thyroid dysfunction on TFTs. In terms of the scans, an MRI IAM usually is a screening quick MRI scan to look for a cerebellopontine angle lesion, most commonly acoustic neuroma, but there are other differentials at the CPA as well that could contribute to tinnitus. An MRA or V of the head and neck or CT angiogram would look for AV malformations or vascular tumours like paragangliomas. An angiogram would do the same. Doppler ultrasound of the carotids would show narrowing of the carotids, usually due to atheroma, which would then need to be dealt with by vascular surgeons depending on the severity of stenosis. MRI brain I would get for middle ear myoclonus to exclude any central structural neurological causes, as there's a wide range of conditions that can be associated with myoclonus. And in benign intracranial hypertension, ophthalmoscopy, best done by someone who does it frequently, like an optician or ophthalmologist, may show papilledema, and a lumbar puncture would show raised opening pressure to confirm the diagnosis.
Great, thank you. What treatment options are available, and what prior considerations would you make before offering these to patients?
So, for an identified cause, the treatment option would be directed to the cause. For example, an AV malformation, I would refer on to a neuroradiologist or neurosurgeon, and the prior considerations in this case would be a finely balanced risk-benefit analysis of whether treatment is more beneficial or monitoring is safer, and that's done by the specialist team. Similarly, in BIH, I would refer for medical management of raised intracranial pressure by a neurologist, and acoustic neuroma or other CPA lesion would be dealt with via the skull base MDT, and the management of these lesions, the considerations would include patient factors, disease factors, and the center factors in terms of what they would offer as treatment. So that's for those things, but in the vast majority of cases, tinnitus does not have an identifiable cause, and it's subjective tinnitus. And unfortunately, there is no medicine or surgery that can cure this tinnitus, or has been shown in high-level evidence to do so. So the mainstay of treatment is counselling and clear explanation of the condition and reassurance and support. And the aim is to help the patient to habituate to their symptom. And it's very important to keep a positive attitude, given the emotional overlay as well. Specific treatments to add to this counselling include hearing aids, which aim to mask the tinnitus by providing the ear with amplified sound. And this is useful where you have an audiogram with documented hearing loss. Another specific treatment is sound therapy. Again, the aim is to mask the tinnitus. And there are two broad classes. One is environmental sound generators, which provide ambient pleasant sounds such as bird song or sounds of the sea. There are also ear-level devices, sort of like mini hearing aids, which provide wide-band white noise sound, again to mask things. There is, you will have heard of tinnitus retraining therapy, which is a specific protocolized therapy which combines counseling and sound therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy actually has reasonably good evidence in the literature for improving the tinnitus impacts. And again, the aim here is to change the patient's emotional and cognitive perception of tinnitus. In very few select cases where the patient has a profound hearing loss that meets criteria, a cochlear implant can often be a very useful treatment as it tackles both the hearing loss and the tinnitus.
Perfect, thank you. Are you able to discuss any current limitations in the management of tinnitus, perhaps drawing examples from current literature or anything that might be relevant to tinnitus in the literature?
Yeah, I think broadly, tinnitus is extremely common, but it is poorly understood. And while we have some theories, they don't completely describe the what's going on. And while we have some treatments that help some people, for many people, they are ineffective. So there's need for more basic science research to improve our understanding and also identify new targets for tinnitus treatment.
Great. So to summarize, we've talked and discussed tinnitus and its management. Tinnitus is a common condition with a prevalence of 1 in 10, and 1 in 200 have a severe impact on their daily living. It can be classified as non-pulsatile and pulsatile, and pulsatile tinnitus can be further split to synchronous and asynchronous. It can also be differentiated between subjective and objective tinnitus. Modern models suggest that tinnitus is due to an increased awareness of spontaneous electrical activity in the auditory system, and the distress comes from changes to the central auditory pathways and associated brain regions. Investigations include pure tone audiometry, tympanograms, blood tests, and imaging that can be variable depending on the presentation. Treatment include reassurance, hearing aids, sound therapy, tinnitus retraining therapy, and psychological therapies. In some cases, surgery may be appropriate. Do you have any closing remarks?
Just that ENT UK and NICE also have guidelines for tinnitus management and assessment. So do have a look at those. And just to say good luck to you all in your exams.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chowdhury, for an excellent session on tinnitus. It has been extremely useful. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Been a pleasure.